We begin tonight with the rising death toll and the mounting questions in what is now the deadliest fire ever in Oakland, California. This is all that remains. Today, investigators sifting piece by piece through the rubble what was once a crowded warehouse party that went up in flames in mere seconds. There are now 33 confirmed fatalities. The blaze overwhelming that building, trapping people inside. The search for loved ones painstakingly slow. Those families now are fearing the absolute worst. And late tonight, word that the district attorney's office has launched a criminal investigation into that fire. ABC's Neil Karlinski leads us off tonight.
Tonight in Oakland, as the number of people killed in this fire grows into the dozens, the painstaking search goes around the clock. Questions now mounting about whether the tragedy should have been stopped long before Friday night's inferno.
Do you feel like this was preventable, like a blind eye was turned towards this warehouse, this facility?
As far as preventable, absolutely. I am not going to make excuses for the city because we have documented, we have turned it in, we have called it in.
The building went up fast and burned ferociously Friday night. People weren't supposed to be living here. It only had permits as a warehouse. Yet code violations show a history of complaints, including about people inside. It was a well-known artist colony called the Ghost Ship and filled at the time for a concert when fire broke out.
I watched it burn for 4 hours. Nothing.
That's the back of the warehouse right there. And to give you a sense of how quickly that burned, the first responders are just right over here, only about a block away.
Most of the dead were on the second floor. Pictures on the warehouse's website show a maze of makeshift art studios before the fire.
It is tragic to watch so many people perish from a fire fatality in front of your eyes and have to be stoic in your job, be professional in your actions, and make sure that we're honoring the victims and their families to bring them safely out of the building.
Tonight, an emotional battalion chief says the impact is beyond what any of her firefighters imagine dealing with.
I think we were surprised at first to find that many bodies where we found them. And we are leaning towards, based on the fact that the bodies appeared to be on top of each other, that it was probably from a fall.
They were on the second floor and it caved in.
Parts of the second floor with burned pianos and other heavy objects are dangling precariously above fire crews, working methodically to recover victims with dignity and make sure what's left of the building doesn't come down on them. Google Earth pictures from the last several years show mounting piles of garbage outside the warehouse, part of the fuel for this blaze that never should have been there. Oakland's mayor tonight promising to find out if the city's worst fire in history was preventable.
I right now have a team of city employees combing through every public record that we have of this building.
And Neil joins us live from the scene. Neil, you're hearing that it could still be another day before investigators reach all of those victims?
Cecilia, that's right. It is very slow going. They say they've only made progress through about 35, maybe 40% of the building. Another day or two left, they say. In fact, you can see the planks of wood behind me. They're using that to literally shore up the walls and make sure the rest of the building doesn't come toppling down on top of those firefighters, Cecilia.
A long process ahead, Neil. Thank you.
And a very, very bad set of circumstances there in Oklahoma. We lost a lot of artists, a lot of free thinkers. It's a shame. You're listening to Views the Twist. Also known as CD, my name is JDR. On your iTunes, your Android, your iOS, on PopMag.com. John Robinson at writerscafe.org. Hawa Kwan at your-poetry.com. And we're also on SoundCloud and Pinterest. I forget to say that. Yeah, what can I tell you, people? You know, there were so many violations with that place, and it was such a beautiful place from the inside, but wise, we all saw and heard what happened. Sit back, relax, Enjoy.
This is the story of Diesel, passenger number one on Animal Advocate Society's Freezing Dogs Freedom Train. It was 40 below in the Yukon when these photos were taken of Diesel, holding first one cold paw, then the other, off the ground. He was chained winter and summer for 4 years. He was kicked in the head by a horse, breaking most of his teeth and splitting his tongue. The blood on his shoulder is from a fight with another dog. His owner had grown tired of him and was threatening to shoot him, a common form of dog control in the north. But Diesel was one of the very few lucky chain dogs. When it looked like Diesel's days were numbered, Animal Advocates was asked for help. Within days, Diesel was on a plane, and within a few more days, he was neutered, a benign tumor removed, and x-rays of his jaw taken.
For once in my life, I have someone who needs me, someone I've needed so long. For once unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used to dream of long before I knew. Oh, someone warm like you.
It's like a perfectly behaved big teddy bear like this, wanting his tummy patted and rubbed, but he's actually off to some educating and some teaching about manners and how to listen, okay? And he's going to come back a perfect boy. So this is him just trying to get as close as he can to me. And he'd actually really like to go running around the streets, I think, but we've got some work to do, okay? Good boy. Good
boy. Diesel did need some training, though, for recall and how to meet men. So we sent him to our rehabilitation camp, where he instantly made friends with Romeo, a dog who our trainer adopted from a pound where he had been for almost 3 years, unwanted by anyone. Romeo will be ready for adoption soon. No, Diesel did not go from being tied up in the snow in the Yukon to being tied up in the snow in Vancouver. That rope is a long line, which trails behind Diesel for the first day or two, just in case he needs to be under control. Diesel tires easily, as he still isn't used to so much fun and play.
For once in my life, I won't let sorrow hurt me, not like it's hurt me before. For once I have something I know won't desert me. I'm not alone anymore. Oh, I can say,
when we know that Diesel is really ready for a home of his own, we will choose a home where he can be kept track of and where the person is known to us in some way. Either we will know them or someone we trust knows them. That is the only truly ethical rehoming of dogs with known health or possible behavior problems. Diesel's bills have cost us $5,000 so far, and we're not finished yet. And then there are Sailor, a young Chesapeake retriever, and Hunter, an old coonhound, waiting for their owners to give them up. We're all ready for them, too. Transport and foster homes are all arranged. We have an offer in to buy them for whatever it takes. We told their owners to name their price, but so far they insist on keeping them. They prefer to keep them chained up. We are not going to give up. Beautiful Black Pepper was chained, starved, and pregnant when we were told about her. She's not anymore. She's now in Vancouver in a heaven-made foster home with pals and a soft bed, and she runs on the beach and hikes up the mountains. There are many more dogs like Diesel, Hunter, Sailor, and Pepper waiting, freezing on their chains, who need you to help them. We can do it together, the rescuer, animal advocates, and your donations. This is how the Freezing Dog Freedom Train works.
For once in my life, I have someone who needs me, someone I've needed so long. For once unafraid, I can go where life leads me, somehow I know I'll be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used to dream of long before I knew.
I love that soundbite. For one thing, it brings about the awareness of how a lot of animals are being treated. And you have to understand, folks, when you go to certain states, when you go to certain countries, they don't treat animals the way a lot of us, or they don't feel about animals the way a lot of us feel about animals. And so these animals are treated in a lot of different ways and a lot of deplorable and awful ways, and that's why, you know, I play that soundbite, because I have to keep up awareness, especially right now, because it's winter time, and you know you're gonna have cats in your engine, you know, so you gotta be careful, you know, and that's serious, you know. I chuckled a bit there, but you know that's serious, and. You know, you might, you know, run across a dog in a yard somewhere that's chained up when it's snowing like crazy outside and cold like hell. You know, because unfortunately, you know, we have a lot of pet owners that don't feel the same way about animals as we animal lovers do. And that's something we have to rectify. It'll never be rectified in that sense, but the people who are treating the animals in this way or in these various deplorable and just abusive ways, you know, they should pay a price. You know, there should be harsher laws. Just that simple. You know, and we're getting there slowly, you know, from state to state. There are several states that have imposed harsher laws concerning animal abuse. So that's very good. But when you go out, you know, like to the southern states and you know, like, I don't want to say middle America, you know, western state, you know, sort of Midwest, I guess, Midwestern states, you know, their whole perception of animals and how you treat animals differ very much from the animal lover. You know, animals for them are just tools. They're just tools. That's all they are. They're not anything to be adorned or, you know, really taken care of, you know, in that sense. So, yeah, you know, it's a hard thing. But, hey, you know, slowly but surely we have to bring awareness about to everyone. You know, that's all you can do, man. Teach the young people. Teach the young people, and they grow up with different minds. You're listening to Views with a Twist. My name is JDR on your iTunes, your iOS, your Android, Podomatic.com, John Robinson at writerscafe.org, Tawakwan at your-poetry.com. We're on SoundCloud. We're on Pinterest as well. So I shall return.
We're going to move on now to North Dakota and the Army's big decision to block a controversial route for the Dakota Pipeline. Protesters who had camped out for weeks celebrating the decision, but their relief may not last long. The incoming Trump administration signaling it may move to reverse the decision. ABC's TJ Holmes has the latest.
Overnight, a major victory for the Sioux tribe at Standing Rock. The Army Corps of Engineers halted construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline, announcing they made the decision due to a need to explore alternate routes.
I guess we made it.
Thousands have taken up residence at the Standing Rock site in solidarity with Native Americans to oppose the $3.7 billion project, which would stretch across four states and be capable of transporting 470,000 barrels of oil daily. The protests, which included Hollywood stars like Pharrell, Mark Ruffalo, and Shailene Woodley, grew increasingly intense. Woodley was even arrested. Opponents of the pipeline claim it could be hazardous and damage the water supply of the reservation nearby. Celebrities and government officials came out in force to share their happiness over the news. Bernie Sanders tweeted, "In the year 2016, we should not continue to trample on Native American sovereignty or become more dependent on fossil fuel." Ruffalo shared his jubilation in this Instagram video post.
"Congratulations to all our relatives at Standing Rock and all the beautiful people who fought to make this happen."
But the corporations behind the Dakota Pipeline said in a statement overnight they fully expect to complete construction of the pipeline without any additional rerouting. Nothing the administration has done today changes that in any way.
A reaction on the other side. There's one GOP lawmaker who summed it up this way. He said he was encouraged that we'll have a new president next month. So what you're talking about here is Trump has absolutely shown support for that pipeline. They're celebrating in a matter of 1 month. He could reverse that when he gets in office.
Well, one of the complications, he actually owns stock in the company that's building the pipeline.
Yes, but the Trump transition wanted to make clear that that has nothing to do with his decision.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks very much.
God damn, I love Slayer, man. It is, you know, when I think about what happened to their guitarist and the fact that they may never play again, it is just like so devastatingly sad. You know, this was just, they were the epitome of heavy metal. You can talk about Metallica all you want, and I like Metallica. Don't get me wrong now. Metallica was a good, or is a good group, you know, but Slayer never sold out. They never sold out. They never changed their music. They remained the same from beginning to end, and it is just one amazing heavy metal group. That's, you know, that's all I got to say about that, you know. And what did we hear before? We heard about, I don't know, we heard about something or other. Yeah, let me take a look. Let's see. I don't know, because I can't look, because I can't see. What the hell is going on? Oh, the Dakota Pipeline. You know what? Let me tell you something. You know, and this may sound racist. Yeah, I guess it will sound racist. You know, but anyone that knows me knows I'm not racist in that respect. The white man already, like, killed most of the Indians. You took away their land, and now suddenly you want to build pipelines in their land, the land that, you know, that they have left. You know what I mean? There's, you know, these people have, you're putting a pipeline that can endanger maybe their water, maybe their environment. You don't know what's happening here, but you just want to, you're going to shove a pipeline through a community of people whose history contains the almost genocide of their population. And now you're going to bug them with this? Why? Because, you know, you gave them a couple of casinos, so you think now, okay, you know, we're cool. Let's put that pipeline through. Hey, yeah, it's... And from what I understand and from what you heard there, it's going to go through anyway. It's going to go through anyway. You know, and it's a shame. You know, but they're going to have to learn to live with it, you know, and hopefully everything goes well and, you know, their kids grow up without any deficiencies, you know, psychological, you know, or physical. You know, that's what you hope, you know, goes on. Anyway, you're listening to Views with a Twist. My name is JDR. On your iTunes, your Android, your iOS, your Podomatic.com. John Robinson at writerscafe.org. Taiwa Kwan at your-poetry.com. We're also on SoundCloud and Pinterest. And I shall retweet. Got loose.
you better not be seen. How the years progress, but the hood remains the same. Whether that's good or bad, who's to say? There are many bright prospects I see day to day. Whose future looks impressive, you know? They'll move out one day. Others, unfortunately, caught in the web, selling new parts. Chewies, got loses. Chewies, crack and green. We need to come together and build us a better scene. Got loses. Chewies. Cracking greens, we got to come together and build us a better scene, better scene.
So yesterday, a grand jury refused to indict the police officers involved in shooting and killing Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old with a toy gun. Now, that's because Tim McGinty, the prosecutor, threw the case and bragged about throwing the case. He told the grand jury, which is unprecedented, that they should not indict. The whole point of a prosecutor going in front of a grand jury is to get an indictment. He presented witnesses not on behalf of the victim, but on behalf of the defendants. Unheard of. I'd literally never heard of it until a crop of corrupt prosecutors in this country decided that no matter what cops do and no matter who they murder, they were going to protect them at all costs because they figured that would help their political careers. So we've seen it all across the country now, and McGinty's the latest one to do it. But there is an extra twist to this story. Ohio is an open carry state. What does that mean? Well, let's go to Charles Pierce in Esquire. He explains Ohio is an open carry state, so even if the cops assumed Rice was 18, and they also assumed his gun was real, they had no cause even to stop him, let alone open fire. Now, look, we've had pictures on the show. We'll have them for you in a second, too. White people, sometimes Latinos, carrying guns, assault rifles in Walmarts, wherever the hell they want. Nobody ever gets shot. Now, you got a 12-year-old with a toy gun here, but ooh, he made the mistake of being black. So I'm going to show you the video one last time here. Look, he's shot in 2 seconds flat. And remember, it's an open carry state. If it was a real gun, he'd have every right to have that gun. Nonetheless, this is what they did to him. He's in a park where kids usually are. It's in Cleveland. They got a report. The 911 person knew that it could have been a toy gun. He didn't pass that along. She didn't pass that along, to be fair. Cops get there. Instead of pulling up on the street, they decided to pull right up to him. They didn't ask him any questions. They didn't say, is that a gun? Is that a toy gun? Hey, what's going on? Hey, drop it. As one writer said, they did not give him an opportunity to live. 2 seconds flat. But I see white people with assault rifles everywhere. I see them in front of mosques. I see them trying to intimidate Black Lives Matter protesters. In fact, some of them shot Black Lives Matter protesters. I see white people who then use that gun, not only against the Black Lives Matter, but they go into Planned Parenthoods and kill people, including cops. But no, you got rights. They got Second Amendment rights. Second Amendment rights. But he got a 12-year-old with a toy gun. He doesn't have any rights. He has the right to get murdered in 2 seconds flat, and then the cops get away with it. Okay, now, more details on Ohio's laws. Ohio, for instance, allows open carry without a permit virtually anywhere, with a major exception for keeping a gun in a car, which requires a concealed carry permit. Now, Tamir Rice, obviously not in a car. He can carry his toy gun anywhere, let alone a real gun. Well, he's not alone. John Crawford was also shot dead with a toy gun, also in Ohio. He was in a Walmart. Cops get a call. Now, yesterday on the program, I said they shot him and killed him in 6 seconds. That's true. You're about to see the video. It took 6 seconds for them to kill him. It took them 1 second to shoot him initially. Okay, they shot at him within 1 second. Now, remember, if this is a real gun in Ohio, he has every right to carry it. And there's no one near him. It's not like there's other shoppers and he's pointing the gun at them or anything. And, of course, it's not a real gun. It's a BB gun. All right, now watch the video. So there's Crawford. He picked up one that wasn't packaged. He's been lying around in that store for 2 years. He puts the gun down. They're shooting at him. He puts the gun down. Okay, the non-gun, by the way, the toy gun. He comes back. Hey, not necessarily to pick up the gun. Maybe the cop thought he was going to pick up the gun. But he didn't pick up the gun. He had his hands up. And it doesn't matter. Shot dead. Shot dead. You have every right to carry a gun openly in Ohio, unless you're black, in which case the cops will shoot at you within 1 to 2 seconds and murder you within at least 6 seconds. What happened? I thought everybody had a Second Amendment right. What happened? I thought we all had the rights. Oh, you meant just white people. And if you know the history of the Second Amendment, you would know that this is actually the point of the Second Amendment, at least in regards to the South. In the South, their militias were called, they had another name, slave patrols. The slave patrols were so that white people could be armed so they could shoot black people. You think black people had a right? Well, according to the Second Amendment, it says people, and ignore the part about the militia, right? But people have a right to bear arms. The African-American people have rights to bear arms? No, they were slaves. They were the ones getting shot. You see how much things have changed. So, more explanation from Vox. They say misuse of a firearm is definitely grounds for formal police intervention, but not mere possession. When white people walk around with guns, that's not misusing it. When black people have toy guns that they're pointing down and there's no one anywhere near them, misuse of a toy gun, murder them. Okay. Then there's this question. They say the legal question for the officers involved in these shootings isn't whether Crawford and Rice had a right to carry a gun in public, but whether they reasonably believed the reported threats were still present up to the moment they shot Crawford and Rice. Well, isn't that neat? See, that's to me, that's even worse. So they're saying, yeah, you got a right to carry a weapon, but if the police perceive you as a threat, they have a right to kill you. Lo and behold, they don't perceive white people as a threat. They perceive black people as a threat, even if they have toy guns, even if they're 12 years old. The prosecutor, not the cops charged, the prosecutor. And then Tamir Rice said, well, I mean, he looked so much older and, you know, and he was a big kid. So, so we thought he was a threat. Come on. He said it was reasonable to think that that 12-year-old was a threat because he looked so much larger. By the way, when they did a study on college campuses, they asked young white women to estimate the age of young black males over the age of 10. On average, they guessed 4.5 years older than the kids actually were. And they rated them as more threatening than white kids. They were just pictures. Nobody was threatening. Nobody was anything. Based on race. Oh, I don't know. They look old. They look threatening. They're black. Oh, I can reasonably perceive that they should be murdered. God damn it. It shouldn't be like this. Okay, here's another example. By putting police officers through a video game simulation, Josh Carell of the University of Colorado Boulder found cops generally pull the trigger more quickly against black suspects than white suspects when the suspect was seen carrying a weapon. Now, I know, people don't want to admit it. They're like, no way. There's no racism in America. No way. But we do the studies. It shows it. Cops see a black person, they shoot quicker. And you just saw the videos. Now, if you look here, I'll just give you a couple of white pictures here. These are guys in the country. Most of the states in this country have open carry. Okay? Look at that giant weapon. That's in Walmart. John Crawford got shot at a Walmart with a toy gun. They have real weapons, assault rifles that they carry around. They're packing. They got a lolly, lolly, lolly. It's their clothing and the way they looked. It's not just their race. That guy's got tattoos all over him. I mean, it's not like he's in a business suit. Nothing wrong with tattoos, but you hold it against black people. But when it's white people, I mean, he's got tattoos and he's dressed in the same way as black people and he's got an actual weapon. But what? But he's white. Why don't you just say it? So if you defend the rights of these wonderful people to have their real guns everywhere, yet you think cops should shoot at black people and black kids within 1 to 2 seconds if they think they might have a gun and they don't even bother asking them, well, then you might be a racist. So just get used to it, okay? That's what you are. Because I know, oh, you're so deeply offended. But when it comes to white people, they get to have guns, they get to have guns. Okay, black people, shoot them dead, shoot them dead. That cop was right. That cop was reasonable. That cop was right. Wait, why are you defending a cop? I thought you loved the Second Amendment, right-wingers. I thought you were all about the Second Amendment. If Tamir Rice had a gun and was twirling it around and carrying it around with him, oh, yeah, well, he shouldn't because he's 12. But they said they thought he looked 18. They thought he looked like an adult. Then shouldn't they have said, oh, you are a good, law-abiding American citizen having your Second Amendment rights in this public square? There's nobody around you that is not threatening anybody. In the Walmart, nobody around him. But if you're black, you're dead. If you're white, then you have your Second Amendment rights. If you think that, whether you recognize it or not, you're a goddamn racist.
And that, listen, I am not one to speculate. I don't want to speculate. But that whole soundbite was absolute truth. And it was, I'm going to tell you, listen, I researched, I know about Tamir Rice, and he's right. The cops, when it came up to Tamir Rice, when the car pulled up, what Tamir Rice was, and he was pointing around that toy gun, the cops got out the car and shot him. And he's absolutely right, within two seconds, there was no put down the gun, freeze, hey, hold it, mister, none of that, they shot him as soon as they got out of the car. It's on video, you know? And unfortunately, I didn't get the gentleman's name that did this. I gotta go back and look, and I'll give it to you next week, because this is absolutely amazing what he did. Because he took every incident that had a video to show, and every incident that was, without question, he put in front of your face and he said, look at this. Open carry law if you're white, not if you're black. If you're black, you're going to get shot. If you're white, you're a great citizen. And he just put example after example. Example, which I find, you know, totally amazing, because, you know, I wasn't even thinking in that direction. But, you know, when you put it all together, folks, you have to think like this. All these instances of black guys getting killed, black guys, yeah, and I think one woman in Dallas with that thing. You have to put it all somewhere into context, because it's no longer coincidence or coincidences. It's no longer that, because it just keeps happening on a constant basis. It doesn't stop. So it has nothing to do with coincidences. It has nothing to do with the fact that Well, maybe it does have to do with the fact that these black guys are a threatening, you know, a big and black. Personally, and those that listen to my show, you know me. I defend the police. I have no. No explanation. None whatsoever. And let's see what happens when we plunge into this Trump regime. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens with the legalization of marijuana. Let's see what happens with police and community. Let's see what happens with racism. Let's see what happens with building a wall, banning Muslims. Let's see what happens. I'm running late, folks, so I'm going to give my shout-outs to the FDNY, the NYPD, North Shore Animal League, ASPCA, Pet Pardons, Show Yourself Side, SOS Wildlife of India, All I'm on the Front End, Deutschland, everybody that listens to me. I hope you come back next week. I'm still trying to get used to this microphone, so, you know, it might sound a little weird. I'm trying to get things straightened out. But you know what? I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And folks, listen, it's getting cold. There's going to be a lot of animals out there that are going to need some compassion. So if you see a circumstance, do me a favor. Be compassionate. I'm out.